Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining me for another wonderful opportunity to share with you some in-depth conversations that will change your life, because that really is the purpose of this program. It's to empower you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible. And I certainly want to welcome any new listener. I invite you to go to my website, whatwomenmustknow.com. I have several free special reports there. I have a Facebook page, which is What Women Must Know, and I post on a daily basis the best information that I have found to really help enlighten you along your way to health and well-being. And I've been away. Many of you may not have been aware of the fact, but I actually have been away for almost 3 months on a lecture tour down under in Australia and New Zealand. So hello to all of my good friends in Australia and New Zealand. I had a wonderful time as always. It's my second home, and I certainly love the opportunity to visit with everyone down there and to share and learn and just get connected with a wonderful part of the world. So I'm back, and gosh, it's like I never left. And I have some exciting projects going on, so I'll keep everyone posted. But we're going to be starting the program, at least my return program, my first truly live show in several months, with a very special guest. I want to be talking to you about what's going on with our beloved cell phones. I just looked up some statistics, and I found that 91% of Americans own a cell phone, and 75% of us own smartphones. There are more statistics that have to do with the age at which children are owning phones, which I actually did not have a chance to find. But I know I am seeing children as young as 8 years, probably younger, who are now on their cell phones or have cell phones or playing with cell phones. And as we know, the wireless world has invaded every aspect of our lives and just getting more so with every month, actually. So the controversy wages. We have heard some reports that cell phones may have some health risks, and we hear a lot from government and the cell phone industry disclaiming any risk to our health. So we're kind of left wondering what is going on as this technology gets more and more pervasive in our world. And let's remind everyone, it's basically new technology. Maybe I remember when cell phones didn't even exist. So, you know, I'm not that old, you know, and yet it has become such a pervasive technology. Well, what's going on here? What do we really need to know? What does the latest research tell us? And what kind of action steps do we need to take? So to help get us up to date with leading-edge research, I am very thrilled to announce as my guest today is Dr. Martin Paul, who is a professor emeritus of biochemistry and basic medical sciences at Washington State University and author of the acclaimed book, Explaining Unexplained Illnesses, Disease Paradigm for Chronic Fatigue Syndrome, Multiple Chemical Sensitivity, Fibromyalgia, Post-Traumatic Stress Disorders, and Gulf War Syndrome. And he published an important paper on how electromagnetic fields impact the cells of our bodies. The study was honored by inclusion at the Global Medical Discovery as one of the top publications in 2013. So if you want to know what is really happening from the effect of cell phones on our body and the mechanism that has been discovered by Dr. Paul, stay tuned, because this is a really, really important show. So it's my great pleasure to welcome Dr. Martin Paul to the show. Hello, Dr. Paul.
Hello. Delighted to be here.
Well, I'm so thrilled to have you here. You know, I know this is a passion for you. It's also a passion for me, trying to get the truth out there into the world. And you have such impeccable credentials, so I hope more people are listening to you, who are making policies in the scientific community and helping us to understand more of what's going on. So I'm looking forward to our conversation today. You know, I thought the best place to start was to ask you what got you involved in this whole topic. How did you, as a scientist focusing on genetics and biochemistry, how did all this occur for you?
Well, I've been interested in multiple chemical sensitivity for a long time, and I've published, quite a number of publications on that. And, and I was aware of this electromagnetic hypersensitivity, which appears at least superficially to be very similar in the sense that, you have exposures to EMFs and they seem to produce a sensitivity response. So I was always interested in the question of what's the target for the EMFs. And I had shown that the targets for the chemicals, and these are indirect targets, are something called NMDA receptors. And I thought, well, maybe it's the same thing for the EMFs, but it turns out that it's not. It turns out that the targets are what are called voltage-gated calcium channels. There's a mouthful for you.
Maybe you can help explain that for our lay audience.
Yeah, I will do that. So these are abbreviated VGCCs, and these are channels that are in the plasma membrane, that is the outer membrane that surrounds all of our cells. And when they're activated, which happens in response to EMFs, they open up the channel and they allow calcium to flow into the cell. And the excess calcium in the cell is responsible for most, if not all, of the biological effects. So calcium is very important. It is used as a signaling molecule in cells, but only for short time periods. And so in general, it's kept the levels are kept very low inside of cells. And so what happens when you're exposed to these fields is, these channels are activated and you get huge amounts of calcium flowing in. And it's that excess calcium that causes all of the problems and all the biological effects. And actually not all, there are some of them that are not problematic, but most of them are.
So when our physical body and our cells are exposed to these fields, which are mm-hmm. emanated from our cell phones, from our laptops, from baby monitors, from just the variety of wireless devices that mm-hmm. we now have in our homes and our schools, and mm-hmm. Cell phone towers everywhere. It is
cell
having
phone towers, Wi-Fi fields, all kinds of wireless communication devices. Yeah,
right.
And we're putting radar units on our cars so they can drive themselves.
And they all have Bluetooth anyway. And now airplanes have Wi-Fi in them, which is not a particularly good idea. I know I've just recently seen some concerns about deaths from pilots or heart attacks going on from people mm-hmm. in planes. Mm-hmm. So this is altering our physiology. It is affecting our cell membranes to have an inappropriate response, letting in too much of these calcium molecules, correct? Am I correct so far?
Well, they're ions. They're not molecules.
They're ions.
But anyway, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So ions are more dealing with charges.
Well, it's
in
a
the
single
body?
It's a single atom with a charge on it.
Okay. So they're opening up these channels inappropriately and therefore altering our biochemistry. Is that right? Okay.
Yes.
So so I have a question
mm-hmm.
before we proceed with all the effects. So the mm-hmm. we have been taught around the cell phone issue that it's only a problem if it's going to heat up our brains, the thermal effect. And they have never found adequate heat being emitted from the cell phones to cause any serious harm, which is the theory that has been promoted by the cell phone industry and even government, right? This point in time,
that's
the government's
correct.
Still holding. But what you're saying, it's an outdated and flawed theory that holds no relevance anymore. Is that correct as well?
In fact, I'm not only saying that, I'm saying it never did.
So what has happened? We've all been hoodwinked, is what my conclusion is around this safety of using these devices.
That's exactly correct. Mm-hmm. So let me just say a few things about that, okay? Back in 1971, so 44 years ago, the U.S. Office of Naval Research came out with a document that listed over 100 health impacts of these EMFs at low intensities, so well within our current safety standards sort of levels, and they gave something close to 2,000 citations, so 2,000 studies that had reported these various effects. That was in 1971, okay? Mm-hmm. And there has been a continual set of publications that have argued all the way up to the, you know, up to the present that there are many health effects of these fields at low intensities. And now what was true and was that we didn't understand how the thing worked, okay? And there was a theory which is touted by the people who claim that you only have to worry about heating effects. There was a theory that supported that view, and it was based on... am I getting too complicated here?
No, I think it's good. I think we're following the trail.
Okay, so there was a theory that supported this view that said that we know that these EMFs can produce forces on charged groups. So they put forces on positive and negatively charged groups. So if you have a molecule in your body that has a charge on it, that it will put a force on that. But that these weak fields are too weak to really do anything. That's their main argument. They said, oh, it's too weak, it can't possibly do anything, so therefore the theory says you can't have any effects other than thermal effects, other than heating effects. So we had all this data that showed that the theory was wrong. In fact, the data was out long before the theory was even proposed. But the people who were touting this simply ignore the data, or they claim that the data is inconsistent, so we should just ignore it. And on that basis, they just go ahead blithely making these claims. Okay, so there's a basic problem in science, and that is that, you know, you've probably heard about a beautiful theory being thrown out because of an ugly fact. Here we have thousands and thousands of ugly facts, and yet they don't throw the theory out. So it's kind of bizarre. And so what was true, as I said before, is we didn't understand how the thing worked. Okay, so and I stumbled upon this the mechanism, which I think is the main mechanism, and may in fact be the sole mechanism of action in our bodies, and that is the activation of these VGCCs. And I initially found two actually quite old papers reporting this, and subsequently found a grand total of 26 papers reporting it. And so I published on 24 of them in 2013, and then I published subsequently on a variety of other things.
Go back to the mechanism of action. So the cell has these calcium ions that are allowed in inappropriately. It's like the gate is open, and they can go into the channels, into the cells, and start creating a variety. They can wreak havoc within the cells. Can you help us understand more of the consequences when this voltage-gated calcium channels open up, let all these calcium ions in. What then goes on that challenges or contributes to our risk of health issues or disease?
Okay. So I think all of the effects are produced by this excessive calcium, or almost all of them anyway. And calcium is a very important signaling molecule in the cell. It works on a number of different mechanisms to produce various kinds of responses in the cell. But when you have too much, you know, of it, you know, that of course will cause problems. And probably the most important of these effects is that calcium can cause increased production of nitric oxide, okay? And it can also cause increased production of another molecule called superoxide. And these two can react with each other to form something else. I apologize for the complexity of this. They react with each other to form peroxynitrite, which is a very potent oxidant. And peroxynitrite breaks down to form free radicals, which attack a lot of the things in the cell and in the body. So that's one kind of mechanism that I think is quite important in producing the various kinds of damage. And as you would expect from this, you know, we know you got too many free radicals, you have what's called oxidative stress. And oxidative stress has been, you know, reported to occur in response to these fields something like 800 times in the scientific literature. So that's well documented. We know that it is produced. Now, everything that is produced through excess calcium isn't necessarily bad under all conditions. And one thing that's important is that there are genuine therapeutic effects of these EMFs when they're used at under appropriate conditions, and when they're focused on a specific area of the body, they can have therapeutic effects. The therapeutic effects are produced by nitric oxide, working through a signaling pathway for nitric oxide. And so there can be positive effects of this when they're, you know, when they're at the right level and on the right tissue that need, you know, has a problem. It can help, actually. But obviously most of the effects we're concerned about are the what we call pathophysiological, the disease-causing problems. And they go through this peroxynitrite mechanism that I talked about before. They also go through excessive calcium signaling that works in other ways, independent of nitric oxide. So those are the two kinds of things that that can happen. And so that, you know, that's basically what we're looking at. So it's a little bit complex, but on the other hand, it's, you know, it's also simple in some ways, in the sense that it looks like this is the main target. The VGCCs are the main target of these fields, and maybe the sole target that we have to worry about.
And the end result of this dysfunction that's going on in our biochemistry is that it leads to the production of more dangerous free radicals. And as most people are aware, free radicals can lead to DNA damage, which can then lead to a whole slew of problems. So can we talk a bit more about some of the health problems that have been associated with exposure to EMFs based on this pathway, this non-thermal pathway that you've been describing, that are very real and valid health risks?
Yeah, okay. So the first thing, as you mentioned, is that you get DNA damage in the cells. Okay, so this is not a direct effect of the EMFs on the DNA. Okay, and that's something I think that people have been assuming, well, the only effects that you have to worry about are direct effects. But this is an indirect effect going through excessive calcium and peroxynitrite and so forth. And that damages the DNA in a number of ways. that have been specifically shown to occur in response to these low-intensity fields. So we have evidence that you can get single-strand and double-strand breaks in the DNA, and those have been, following exposures, including cell phone, by the way. And we have evidence that you also get changes that are some, depending on whether you're in the UK or in the US, they're called 8-oxoguanine or 8-hydroxyguanine, changes in the DNA, and those are mutagenic, so they cause mutations. The breaks in the DNA also can cause mutations. And so those are the things that also can cause cancer, as you might expect. And so, so people have claimed that, well, it can't possibly cause cancer, and that's just sheer nonsense, because these free radicals, in fact, can cause cancer. So all the reports, and there have been quite a number now, of not only cell phone use, but other types of EMFs causing cancer. There is a mechanism which is plausible and documentable, but it hasn't been shown yet that this is the way in which cancer is produced by these fields. But that's it's a probable mechanism at this point.
So talking about cancer, I don't want to say this. There's a concern and a growing incidence of brain tumors, especially gliomas, mm-hmm. that are related to the side of the head where the cell phone is. And do you contribute this directly to the non-thermal effects that you're describing as increasing that risk?
Yeah, I do. And let me just make one other point about this. There have been concerns about exposures to electric power line fields, particularly high voltage ones, but also, at least in principle, lower voltage ones that we have in our houses. Those also work via this VGCC activation.
Mm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So they have the same target. And so, if I tell you something can be produced by, say, microwave frequency EMFs in this way, it may also be produced by these other EMFs as well. The main concern at this point is microwave frequency stuff, because that's what's going up, every day, every week, every month, at a horrendous pace. And so that's the main concern, but the others are certainly of concern as well.
And I think it's worth noting that this microwave radiation is really man-made frequencies that doesn't really exist in nature. So we're part of an experiment that is going on right now.
Yeah, I mean, the levels of these are very low in nature. There's another aspect to it. In fact, more than one other aspect to it that has been discussed in the scientific literature, and that is these artificial fields, are polarized, and most of them are also pulsed, because whenever you do wireless communication of any sort, you're communicating via pulsation. Both the pulsations and the polarization make them much more biologically active.
Mm.
So we're talking about not the effects of the individual photons that make these things up. We're talking about the fields as a whole, the EMFs as a whole. And these artificial EMFs have properties which make them more biologically active than they would be otherwise. And that's an important thing as well, because, people talk about, well, these are low-intensity fields. You don't have to worry about them. They're too low. But all these things influence biological responses. And,
so,
yeah.
Oh, go ahead. I was going to say, let's go back and talk about some of the health, other health risks associated. We see increased risk and incidence of cancer from exposure to these fields. But you also mentioned other conditions, other problems that are associated with exposure to these fields.
Yes.
Maybe we can just elaborate a bit more so people really understand how these fields are creating such a magnitude of risk for all of us.
Yeah, well, yeah, the scope of this, I think, is absolutely stunning. Okay, so there are many published studies that have shown that that these fields impact male fertility, and we know that there's a essentially worldwide decline in sperm count and sperm quality. You know, so almost all around the world, this has been shown to be getting. There's a decline, a major decline, and that's unexplained. And so the obvious explanation is that, you know, this is being caused by these EMFs, because we've got, you know, like we have cell phones all over the world nowadays. And, and obviously cell phone towers and, all, you know, antennae and all this sort of stuff. So that's the obvious explanation. Let me just say, there is also evidence for female infertility, but it's much harder to study, and so it's been much less studied. And there's also evidence for increasing spontaneous abortions. All three of these that may be caused then by EMF exposure, if I can't, you know, so one of my concerns, and I think it could be a major concern, and I'll tell you why later maybe if we have time, is that there may be an absolute crash of fertility in much of the world as our exposures go up and as the times of exposure increase. so that's a major concern. Okay, so that's one thing. There are life-threatening cardiac effects, I believe that they occur through the effect of these fields on what are called the pacemaker cells in the heart. So there are cells in the heart, in a particular location in the heart, that regulate the heartbeat. And they use these VGCCs in this process. So the VGCCs have very important roles. These pacemaker cells have very high densities of these VGCCs. So I think the pacemaker cells are highly susceptible to this, and we've had problems where people exposed to these fields develop arrhythmias. They develop both tachycardia, fast heartbeat, and bradycardia, slow heartbeat, so things that look opposite but may in fact be related to each other. And arrhythmias, as you may know, are often associated with sudden cardiac death. We've had an epidemic of young, apparently healthy athletes dying in the middle of an athletic competition. Sudden cardiac death, unexplained. Now, you know, I don't have any proof that this is explained by the EMF exposures, but I strongly suspect that that's what's going on. It's just, you know, this is just another stunning thing that's going on. People are just ignoring the obvious connection. And it has to stop.
What about the breakdown of the blood-brain barrier?
Okay, well, that's another thing that's been reported, and that's been reported in response to cell phone use as well as other kinds of EMFs. My number one concern in this, we haven't talked about it at all, and that's the impact on the brain. and specifically on the neurons in the brain.
Dr. Paul, can we take a break here? Because this is a really big topic,
sure.
And we're just going to stop and have a little station break. And when
okay.
we come back, I know you have a lot to say about the impact on the brain and our whole neurotransmitter pathways, which I really want to hear what you have to say, I'm sure, so do all my listeners. So let's just stop here, take a moment, and we'll have a little station break. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You're listening to What Women Must Know. Don't go away. We have some really important information to share with you when we come back.
This is Paul Capilcante, host of The Vinyl Experience, and you're listening to PRN, your source for the best in progressive conversation, news, and entertainment.
Hi, this is Maria Heller, host of The Maria Heller Show, heard at MariaMeria.net 4 days a week. But every Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern, you get to hear one of the best shows of the week on The Maria Heller Show right here on PRN.fm. If you missed the show, they're archived right here on site at PRN. Support real truth in media by tuning in and sharing the information you hear with anyone that'll listen. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you are coming with us.
You're listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You're listening to What Women Must Know. And today we're having a very important conversation with my guest, Dr. Martin Paul, who's a PhD. He is a professor emeritus of biochemistry and basic medical sciences at Washington State University. And he is a powerful voice that has been researching the mechanisms of action from exposure to microwave radiation, electromagnetic fields from our cell phones, our wireless devices, and what's really happening to our bodies when we are exposed to these technologies, which we all are at this point in time. There is no escape from these fields. And so we've been talking, Dr. Paul, about some of the effects of these fields on our body, and we talked earlier about the mechanism that you have put forth. Let's talk about the effect on our brains and on our moods and our whole psychological state.
Okay. I was wondering if I could mention a couple of things before I get into the brain stuff. Can I do that?
Sure thing.
So we talked about cancer previously, and I just want to say, you see articles in the press all the time, saying, oh, this can't possibly be true, and basically putting out industry propaganda on this stuff. And I have to say, I regret to say that one of these articles was published in the New York Times in July 21st, 2015, did that once again. And the New York Times that we look to as the newspaper of record in this country is putting out industry propaganda, and did so in that article. So, I think it's tragic. And, so I just wanted to mention that.
Tragic because we're lulled into a false sense of security about using these technologies.
That's correct. Absolutely.
Which is its purpose, really.
There are many ways in which we can lower the biological effects of these EMFs, but what we are doing now is we are running as fast as we possibly can in exactly the wrong direction. Mm. And the consequences of that, I think, are absolutely immense, and I'll try to get into some of those later on in the program if we have time.
Okay.
But they really threaten everything that we care about. I just want to say you know, I will talk subsequently about, and there are, by the way, also effects on the endocrine system, on, you know, hormone controls of these fields, and that's not surprising because most of the hormones in the body are released through the action of the VGCCs, and so they can cause problems because of that. And again, the literature on this goes all the way back to that 1971 Office of Naval Research report, which listed 8 different endocrine effects. So, you know, none of this stuff is new. None of this stuff should be surprising to us, but, you know, it's huge amounts of things are being ignored. Okay, so let's talk about the brain and neuropsychiatric effects. I just published a paper about, actually it's not even out officially, but it's on the publisher's website. It doesn't have page numbers on it yet, I don't think. On neuropsychiatric effects of these EMFs. And what I want to do is to tell you something about how that paper was structured. Because, you know, a lot of these things are based on epidemiology. You know, do you see a correlation between something and some environmental factor, in this case, EMF exposure? The problem with epidemiology is even when it's very strong, there are always some kind of arguments that you can use against it. So what's crucial when you look at these things is what you know about the real biology. And because the real biology is the hardest science, and you can't argue with that. So what do we know about the real biology of these low-intensity microwave frequency EMFs on the brain? And there were two things that I documented in great detail in this paper, which were very important, I think. One is that there have been extensive studies in animals, mostly in rats, where it's been shown that these low-intensity fields have all kinds of impact on the brain, on the structure of the brain, and the function of the brain in these animals that can and has been extensively documented. So all these things that shouldn't happen based on our current safety standards are clearly and demonstrably and happening in animals to an extraordinary extent. So we know there are many effects on the brain that show up if you do, you know, what we call histological studies, where you look at the structure of the cells in the brain and you look at the synaptic connections between the neurons. You look at all these things and you find that they're quite aberrant. There are major changes that occur in the brain. So that's the first thing, is we know there's huge impact. In fact, it was claimed, and this is from the old Soviet literature, it was claimed that the brain is the most sensitive organ in the body to these fields. Followed by the heart and by the testis, interestingly. But there are many other tissues that are impacted as well, but the brain is number one in terms of its impact. Now, so that kind of, you know, when you look at that, what do you conclude? Well, you conclude that the widespread neuropsychiatric effects are almost inevitable if you're getting all these changes in the brain structure and function. The second thing that I showed in this paper, and this is all from the literature, none of this is my experimental work, is that there's a genetic polymorphism in humans where the main VGCC in the brain is affected by genetic change, which is common in this, fairly common anyway, in human populations. So, and this form of the gene that produces higher amounts of the channel protein, the main channel protein in the brain, is associated with quite a number of different neuropsychiatric effects in humans. Okay, so you get higher amounts of a variety of different neuropsychiatric things in humans when you carry that form of the gene. So those people are almost certainly going to be more susceptible to EMF effects for this reason as well. And so let's go into the epidemiology now. The epidemiology shows that the following things are associated with and caused by EMFs. They include sleep disturbance and insomnia, which of course is basically the same thing, headache, fatigue / tiredness, depression / depressive symptoms, dysesthesia, which has to do with sensory effects. So you can get changes in vision and hearing and in smell in the olfactory system. Concentration, attention, and cognitive dysfunction, dizziness / vertigo, memory changes, and by that I mean that means loss of memory, restlessness, tension, anxiety, stress, agitation, feeling of discomfort, irritability, and in several other things. So let's, you know, you look at those effects, and they, you know, these things are things that, you know, we think of, oh, well, this is all a function of stress, meaning psychological stress in modern society. But stress may not have anything to do with it. It may be the EMFs that are causing all this stuff. And this is, you know, I mean, this is incredible, really incredible. And let me just say, you know,
let me just jump in because I have to say that every day we hear about the epidemic of insomnia and how depressed people are. And then there's memory loss that's going on, and people are really scared of having early dementia or maybe being diagnosed with dementia, maybe more advanced forms like Alzheimer's, which could all and most likely are affected, if not caused, by this constant exposure to these fields, to electromagnetic fields.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that, you know, I haven't published anything on dementias, but we know that... I'm sorry?
I'm sure it's coming soon.
Well, it's coming. I don't know whether it's soon or not. There's too many things to do. You know, we know that neurodegenerative diseases, including Alzheimer's, but, you know, Parkinson's, ALS, and various other types, are caused to a great extent by excessive calcium in the cell. So, you know, it's eminently reasonable that these things would be caused by EMFs. So I think that, I'll tell you about this. There was an absolutely fascinating study that was published in a study of rats where they, this research group, exposed very young rats to a whole series of short pulsed radiation, EMF pulses, and as young rats. And then they looked at these rats as middle-aged rats, and they had already high levels of oxidative stress and high levels of the amyloid beta protein in the brain. And they also had the, you know, kind of behavioral changes that you have when that are common in dementias. Two of them were studied. And so, you know, it looks like you're getting, you know, Alzheimer's-like dementia in rats, not a species that's known to have this. mm-hmm. In response to these short pulses of EMFs. It's absolutely stunning. What what are we doing to ourselves with this kind of stuff? And you know, it's just totally bizarre. I mean, so now, I mean, is this relevant to humans? Well, of course, we don't know, but we do know that, and I talked about the fact that the extremely low frequency fields that we get from our wiring works in the same way. High exposures to those extremely low frequency fields can increase the incidence of Alzheimer's in humans, according to epidemiology studies. So, you know, that may well be the same mechanism. Wow. Now, one of the concerns here mm-hmm. is that we're getting a lot of reports now of very young people coming down with dementia at yes. age 30 or 35. People coming down with dementia, something that was absolutely unheard of not too long ago. And so then the question is, well, are these caused by the EMFs? Well, you don't know for certain, but, you know, but let me just make one other point, and that is that you remember the polymorphism I mentioned before?
Yes.
That produces...
in the brain.
These widespread neuropsychiatric changes. It's also associated with an increased incidence of Alzheimer's disease. So, you know, so when you have higher levels of this VGCC in the brain, you're more susceptible to Alzheimer's. So there's a lot of evidence that's pointing in a particular direction. Is that proof? Well, no, it's not proof, but it sure is a horrible red flag, and it makes absolutely no sense to keep ignoring all these things.
I'm Dr. Pawlawan, because we're coming to the end of the show, and a couple of important points I want you to address. Number one, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. in your opinion, the mm-hmm. connection between increased risk for autism and exposure to these fields, and also people who claim to have, and I don't doubt them, electrosensitivity, you know, hypersensitivity to those fields. And also when we're talking about this cluster of content here. Let's throw in the smart meters and your thoughts about the smart meters as well.
In 25 words or less.
Pretty much so.
Let me take the smart meter thing first because it's in some ways the simplest thing to do.
Okay.
The smart meters were introduced in the U.S. and in many other parts of the world without any biological testing whatsoever. You know, they're all based on this theory that we know is wrong, that only heating effects apply. And so the only data that we have, it comes from two epidemiological studies of smart meters, one in Australia. One was done in the U.S., but I think it was done basically with nickels and dimes. That is, it was not funded by any, you know, by the organizations, including the NIH, that you'd think would be funding these things. And they both showed widespread neuropsychiatric effects of smart meter exposure. One of them studied the cardiac effects and found them. That was the Australian one. I think the U.S. one did not study that. So these are effects, you know, as I've said before, that are produced by other low-intensity microwave EMFs. So the fact that you find them in smart meters isn't at all surprising, and the fact that they occur widely in response to these EMFs argues that the smart meter observations are almost certainly correct. So you know, even though there's not a lot of data on smart meters, the data we have is quite concerning. I think it was completely and utterly irresponsible to introduce smart meters without any biological testing. But, of course, these other things are not tested biologically either. And so So it's crazy. We're really in a crazy world. Okay, now, let's see. Okay, other question. The question of
autism.
I think, let me just say, I think there are 10 groups that have proposed that that autism, the autism epidemic may be caused, at least in part, by EMF exposures. And based on very, you know, mainly based on correlative data, that, you know, that there's a parallelism. Although there are other data that also support that as well. And I think that this is correct, and I think that mechanistically it goes much deeper than that. But the mechanism of autism is complex, and so it's something that, you know, you really have to, I mean, I can't really talk about it effectively in this kind of forum because it's just too complicated. Mm-hmm. I do think my opinion is that the main cause of the autism epidemic is probably EMF exposures, but that chemicals also have a role, and that the chemicals also act through excessive intracellular calcium, as do the EMFs.
So it becomes another risk factor for these vulnerable children.
And they may well act synergistically together, which, if that's true, and I suspect it's true,
right,
may make it difficult to say, well, it's X percent of this and you know, 100 minus X percent of the other. So, you know, it may be difficult to say, but that's
but basically... this is where warning pregnant women to reduce the risk, making sure that when you give birth, you are not having either on the cell phone while you're holding your baby or having a baby monitor that is a pulse electromagnetic field right along their head, mm-hmm. and making mm-hmm. sure that you reduce exposure as much as possible. I would imagine you would advise.
Yes. And in fact, Dr. Dietrich Klinghardt reported that he did a study that's on the internet. It's never been published in a proper journal. But what he found was that the EMF levels of and he studied them in where the mothers were sleeping while they were pregnant, and also subsequently where the baby was sleeping after birth. The EMF levels that were associated with the autism patients were something like 20 times higher than the EMF levels in normal controls.
Yeah.
So this is a big difference.
Yeah.
And suggests causality.
Can we have a couple minutes? Oh, go ahead.
Dr. Corey Jelter has reported that she finds that when you have autism patients, that you can get substantial improvements in them by putting them in an environment where the EMF levels are much lower.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think these are definitive, but they are highly suggestive.
Right.
And, you know, and so, you know, yeah, people have to use common sense here. And the common sense is, yeah, you need to avoid these exposures. It's really difficult to avoid EMFs for all kinds of reasons. You know, even if you take the EMF, you know, you take the Wi-Fi field out of your house, if you're living in an apartment, which I guess probably most New Yorkers do, you can get Wi-Fi fields from your neighbors coming in through the walls. Are there ways of dealing with that? Yeah, you can put graphite paint on the wall, and that'll serve as a shield.
I was going to ask you, what are your recommended interventions? What do we do to either protectives like that graphite paint. That's interesting. Or
nutritionals.
What are your favorite recommendations to reduce the risk from the biological effects of these exposures? And we only have a couple of minutes. So,
Okay.
I think it's gone really quickly.
I mean, don't use your laptop on your lap. Don't use Wi-Fi. Hardwire things as much as you can. Avoid Wi-Fi fields. Avoid cell phone antennas, which are horrendous. It's very difficult to do. I've been putting up, shielding in my car to try to avoid cell phone antenna exposures when I drive around. But it's not easy to do that. There are shielding materials you can buy from Less EMF and from some other companies. If I were a pregnant woman, one thing I would do is buy a shielded long T-shirt mm-hmm. and put it on and wear it most of the time to protect the fetus. During pregnancy, I think that's one thing that could be quite useful. But it's a real challenge because there's so many places you get exposed and different exposures are different from each other. I still use a couple of microwave ovens, but one of them I've put out in the pantry and I put shielding around it. And one kind of shielding you can use is just aluminum foil, but uh-huh. aluminum foil doesn't absorb it; it just bounces it the other way. So you have to worry about where it's bouncing it as to whether that makes sense or not. You can use graphite paint. You can buy other kinds of shielding materials.
What about nutritionally?
I'm sorry?
What about nutritionally?
Well, nutritionally, I think I sent you this paper. I think that raising NRF2 is useful, mm-hmm. but I can't really make an argument here for that. NRF
which just,
number two.
Which would reduce foods that reduce oxidative stress and inflammation.
Yeah, they'll reduce the oxidative stress responses. The other thing I think is it'll probably do is to lower the activation of the VGCCs, or at least some of them, because of the way the VGCCs are regulated. Those can both be useful, I think. And let me just say, I'm a PhD, not an MD. None of this should be viewed as medical advice.
Scientific advice.
Well, whatever.
I think it's incredibly valuable advice. And I know that you are really passionate to get this information out. So, we've come to the end, Dr. Paul. Thank you so much. And to all my listeners, thank you for joining me. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You've been listening to What Women Must Know. And remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.